Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas. Loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and how the tech are you? At the beginning of this year, that being 2023, I said like it felt like it was going to be the year of AI, and so far, I think I'm pretty much on the money. But more specifically, 2023 has been the year of generative AI. That is, artificial intelligence that creates or generates something, whether it's an image, a sound, or as we're going to talk about today, text in response to some sort of input. Now, before we go any further, this is where we need to remind ourselves that while this is a type of artificial intelligence, it's not all of AI. Not every AI application involves generative processes. And while generative AI can seem fascinating, exciting, surprising, or creepy, I believe that largely stems from how generative AI appears to be mimicking humans, and it's not an indication of how sophisticated, advanced, or dangerous it really is. It's kind of an uncanny valley thing because it appears to be behaving like a human. We start to project things on it that aren't necessarily accurate or realistic. I think of it kind of like the way we can be with our pets, where we will project things on our pets that may not reflect what the pet is actually experiencing, but that's how we're perceiving it. So the reason I say all of this up at the very top of this episode is that we're also seeing a lot of people expressing concern about AI, which is understandable, you know, about how it could potentially lead to harm. And these are legitimate and rational concerns. However, with the focus on stuff like ChatGPT, for example, or Google Bard, I would argue the concern is far too narrowly focused on just one aspect of AI. And in my opinion, it's not even the most dangerous implementation of AI. I mean, we have cars on the road right now that use AI for driver assist and autonomous operations. If we're worried about the robots taking us down, maybe we shouldn't make them our chauffeurs. But really, that's a topic for another episode. Today, I wanted to take a look at an issue that crops up in AI chatbots like OpenAI or Google Bard and similar products. This is one that is concerning because it's an issue that leads these tools to create false or misleading information while presenting that info in a way that seems authoritative and trustworthy. And in the field of AI, the term hallucination is used to describe this situation. At least a lot of folks will use the word hallucination. As it turns out, there's actually some debate in AI circles about whether or not that should be the appropriate term. Now, for we mere mortals, a hallucination is when we have an experience in which we perceive something that isn't reflected in reality. Maybe we hear a sound, but there was actually no sound present. Maybe it was that tree falling in the woods and no one was around or something. Or we see something that's not really there. It can be really darn disconcerting, and sometimes it can be absolutely terrifying. I'm reminded of how many people who experience sleep paralysis often will also have hallucinations accompany this period where they're awake, but they cannot move. And it's probably because sleep paralysis occurs when you're kind of caught between being asleep and being awake. So there's still some dreamlike activity going on in your brain that's trying to explain things like why you're unable to move. Oh, it's because you have this witch perched on your chest and she's pinning you to the bed. Tools like ChatGPT are not dreaming. You know, they're not perceiving anything at all. They have no senses to trigger. So they cannot hallucinate in that sense. Instead, what they are doing is mistakenly assigning high confidence to something that they just plain made up. So they're treating it like it's a fact that they're highly confident is accurate, when really they just invented it. So it is an instance where they're really confident in something that is not coming from a reliable source in the AI's actual training data. So if we wanted to put that into human terms, it'd be kind of like if you made up a story to explain something that otherwise would either be really boring or maybe really embarrassing. So you make up a lie, in other words, to cover up something that you would rather not be known. And so you tell this lie over and over when people are asking you about this particular thing, and you repeat it often enough where gradually your brain essentially makes a pathway where this fake version of history of what actually happened becomes the real one in your head. You begin to believe your own lie. And so in future tellings of the story, you don't even realize you're lying at all. You're telling what you believe to be the real sequence of events, even though it's all a fib. That's kind of what's happening with AI hallucinations, only it happens all at once. And for that reason, some folks prefer to use other terms to describe what AI does when it starts to invent things in response to a query from a user. So some have proposed the word confabulation as an alternative descriptor of what's going on. So this is similar to kind of the scenario I just gave, because it's in human psychology, a confabulation is when we have a hitch in our memory. And so we fill in a gap that's in our memory. We're not doing it consciously. It just happens. And that might mean we fill in a gap that doesn't at all reflect what really happened. So this can happen at any time. I've seen it happen with people who are in like a situation that was totally unexpected and high stress. I've seen it in training operations where you have a group of people and then someone bursts in as if they are a burglar or a thief or something. And then they get out, and then those people who were just subjected to this very scary situation are asked to give details about the thief's appearance, and people start to invent things, not purposefully, not with the intent to deceive, but because their memory is just trying to fill in gaps because their perception didn't really take it all in. So confabulation doesn't imply intent. And I think that might be why a lot of researchers like the word, because it's not the intention of the AI to fool people or to pass off fantasy as if it were reality. Instead, the AI is making an honest go of trying to meet the expectations of the user. So if you ask the AI about, say, a historical figure, the AI really tries to give you a good answer. But occasionally, that answer might be wrong. Not because the AI is drawing from a bad data source, but because there's actually a gap in its knowledge, and the AI just fills that gap as best it can. Unfortunately, the end result is you get an answer that seems totally cromulent. Like, you could just imagine reading that answer in a respectable, thoroughly fact-checked encyclopedia, but then it turns out to be garbage. So let's talk about how this happens, which will involve an overview of how these chatbot AI tools are trained, and at a very, very high level, how they work. So this is going to involve some discussion about machine learning and statistics. So, first off, how do machines actually learn? I think it's pretty easy to understand how we program machines to do some specific task, right? We create a set of rules that this machine follows sequentially, and the machine executes those rules as directed, and then we get the result we wanted. That is easy to understand. So I'll give an example. Let's say we have a robotic arm, and you've got two tables, and you put a wooden block on table number one, and you program the robotic arm to pick up this wooden block on table one and move it over to table two. Once you program it, then it should be able to do that task over and over, assuming that no one has moved the tables, no one has moved the robotic arm, and the wooden block is always in the same place and it's always the same size, right? You haven't changed any of the parameters. So it's the exact same situation over and over and over again. You've created this simple program. It should be no surprise when the robotic arm does it successfully. But what if we wanted a robotic arm that could learn how to pick up different objects from table one and then move them to table two? These objects could be different shapes, they could be different sizes, they could weigh different amounts, they might be made of different stuff. Maybe some of them are fairly delicate, and the arm would break the object if it applied too much pressure. So how would we build a robotic arm that could deal with these different scenarios, including ones where we put something completely new to the robot on the table, something that the robot has never encountered before? Well, to do that, we would probably pursue a machine learning model in order to teach this robot the whole process of picking something up, especially something it had not encountered before. So basically, machine learning uses sets of algorithms in an effort to get better at a given task. And part of learning involves training, which really boils down to feeding a machine lots and lots and lots of information. Like, the more information you can feed it, the better. And then letting it process this information in an effort to get a specific result, and then going back and tweaking the model to refine it over and over and over and over again to get better at it over time. So we'll imagine a hypothetical machine learning model that is designed to do something relatively simple, like recognize if an image has a cat in it or not, because this is actually something that has been done with machine learning models in the past. It's actually a fairly popular approach is, does this picture have a cat in it? Or does this video have a cat in it? That kind of thing. Let's imagine that our machine learning model is an actual physical model, like it's a giant funnel. So on the wide end of the funnel, that's where we just dump tons of photographs. With some of them have cats in them, some of them don't. Now imagine that at the narrow end of the funnel, at the bottom of the funnel, we actually have two channels. One channel leads into a bucket that says no cats here, and the other channel leads to a bucket that says, ah, sweet, kitty cats. So we dump thousands, maybe millions of photographs into the top of this funnel, and the funnel starts to sort the pictures. We can't see this because it's inside the funnel, but there are channels inside that funnel where photos are directed. either to go more toward the no kitty cat side or the yes kitty cat side. And they go through these channels all down the funnel. And at the very end of it, they start spitting out these images into the two buckets. Well, once it's done, once it has processed all the photos, we take the two buckets and we see how our model did. And maybe we see that the model caught most of the pictures with cats in them, but not all of them. Maybe we also see that there are some photos that fell into the kitty cat bucket that have exactly zero kitty cats in the picture. Something is not working inside our model. So at that point, we open the funnel. We, you know, take the top off or whatever. We have built in a hinged latch or something, and we've opened it up. Now, essentially, inside our funnel, we see all those channels. And each channel is meant to look for some sort of evidence of a cat. And if it finds evidence, it pushes it closer toward the pathway of kitty cat. And if it doesn't, it pushes it closer to the pathway of no kitty cat. But there's tons of these channels. Some of them feed images back up through the whole process again. It's very complicated inside this funnel. And you have to go in there and start to tweak little bits of rules in these channels to adjust for whatever problem you're encountering at the end result when you're done. So when you're training your model, you change the weights of these different decisions that are made. Some decisions perhaps have too much emphasis on them, like they're too powerful and they're skewing the results. So you reduce the weight of that particular decision point and you increase the weight of a different one to try and get things right. It's a painstaking process and you have to do it over and over again. And these exercises repeat and you try to refine your model to get it better at deciding whether or not a photograph has got a cat in it or doesn't. And eventually, if everything is working well, it gets very, very good at sorting images. Maybe once in a while, something sneaks through. Maybe there's a cloud that kind of looks like a kitty cat and it goes into the wrong bucket. Or maybe there is a kitty cat that goes into the no kitty cat bucket, but the kitty cat was kind of obscured in the picture and the model just couldn't suss it out. But it succeeds more often than not. Okay, that's a baseline. When we come back, we'll talk a bit more about machine learning and how this plays into tools like ChatGPT.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Okay, I laid out one version of machine learning. And I want to stress, that's just one version of machine learning. It's related to things like neural networks, which are designed to kind of mimic the way our brains process information and form pathways among neurons while we're trying to suss things out. But that's just one version of machine learning. I don't mean to say that's how it all works. There are actually lots of subfields within machine learning, neural networks being just one of them. But there's also subsets of neural networks. One of those was would be deep learning, which always makes me think of MST3K and deep herding. Shout outs to any Misties out there. Now, as you dive down to deep learning, you're really getting into an interesting field of AI and machine learning. So deep learning models can accept unstructured data. If you're going further up to less specialized machine learning models, these have to use heavily labeled data sets and heavily structured data and use supervised learning in order to improve with time. But when you get into deep learning, you're looking at a very focused approach to machine learning where you can just feed unstructured data that has no labels to it and start to use this model to do whatever it is that you want it to do. But we're still kind of talking about a channeling or funneling situation here. The input goes into the model analyzes the input and pushes it further one way or another through the system, and it comes out the end as output, which could be an image search result for kitty cats in your smartphone's photo roll, for example. So if you've ever gone into a smartphone photo collection and you just typed in a general word in search, you know, it's not that you tagged any of your photos with this. You're just like looking for photos in your roll that has a cat in them and it returns something like that. Well, that can be the result of a machine learning process like the one I've just described. Because again, the system has to figure out which of your photos have cats in them, even though you didn't tag any of those photos with cats. It doesn't have metadata. It has to analyze the photo itself. Now it's time to talk about probabilities. Large language models, LLMs, which are what power chatbots like Google Bard and ChatGPT, they work in probabilities. And there's one example of an AI using probabilistic algorithms to generate responses that I really love to reference, and that example is IBM's Watson platform. So while the world right now is struggling to figure out how to handle ChatGPT and Google Bard and such, IBM's Watson gave us a glimpse at what we could expect all the way back in 2011. That's when IBM famously put Watson to the test in some exhibition games of the game show Jeopardy against former champions of that game show, human champions. So in many ways, this was an echo of IBM's Deep Blue going up against chess master Garry Kasparov in various games of chess. Putting Watson up against humans in Jeopardy was a fantastic publicity stunt, and it also was really impressive because the way Jeopardy works is players get several categories of trivia that they can choose from. Each category has different levels of questions that are designated by a dollar amount. So the higher the dollar amount, the harder the trivia question is, generally speaking. The actual clue that the players get is given in the form of an answer, and they have to provide a question that relates to that answer. So here's an example. The answer revealed in, say, a hypothetical Jeopardy game that has the category podcasts could be something like, he was Jonathan Strickland's original co-host on the show Tech Stuff. The correct response would be, bip, 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 who is Chris Paulette? That would be the correct answer. But Jeopardy goes beyond just trivia. Often, the answers provided will include wordplay or images or sound cues, and players will have to think outside the box. They can't just know the answer. Sometimes there's interpretation that has to happen first. The clue to the correct response could be a pun. It could involve a rhyme to the answer. It's not always a straightforward trivia question, in other words. So Watson needed to be able to analyze the clue given, to break it apart into components to understand what exactly is being asked of it. Then it needed to search its database for relevant information. So Watson famously was not connected to the internet during these Jeopardy games. Instead, it was relying upon a database representing millions of books filled with facts. Then it would generate hypothetical responses, like a hypothetical answer that Watson should give, or rather questions, as we're talking about Jeopardy. And it would submit these hypotheses to a second round of analysis to look at, is there any evidence that supports this response as being correct? Kind of measuring like, well, here's a possible answer. How likely is this answer to be right? And that was all part of the process. So it might even produce more than one answer. You might have multiple potential answers, and Watson would assign each answer a probability, kind of a confidence level of how it felt that answer measured up against all the other ones. So as an example, answer A might receive a 90% confidence level. So that's pretty darn confident that that's the right answer. Maybe you have answer B and you're like, I'm 78% sure that this could be right. And answer C is the long shot with 33% confidence. These don't add up to 100 because they're not, it's not like a zero sum game. It's more like, oh, it could be this or it could be that, but I feel like this is more likely than that. So I'm going to go with this. And Watson also had a threshold. If the answer it generated failed to meet a certain confidence threshold, Watson would not buzz in to try and answer. Otherwise, Watson played pretty aggressively. And even in some sticky situations with daily doubles, where if you get a daily double in Jeopardy, you don't buzz in anymore. If you are the one who chose the daily double, you're playing by yourself and you just have to give an answer. So in those situations, Watson got aggressive and it would guess with very low confidence thresholds for some of these, like at the 30% range. And occasionally it was right. In fact, more often than not, it was right until it got to Final Jeopardy, where at least the first time, things did not go totally in Watson's favor. Also, Watson had an interesting betting strategy when it came to daily doubles, but I'm getting way off track. So that confidence level is really what I want to hone in on here. So it was expressed in percentages. So 0% confidence would be like, I do not know the answer. I do not know what goes here. A 100% confidence level would be, I am absolutely certain this is the right answer. And in a way, AI chatbots like ChatGPT and Google Bard are doing the same thing, only their confidence isn't about this is the answer to your question. I'm 100% certain that this answers your question. It's more granular than that because it's more at the sentence level. It's like, I think this word is the word that needs to go next to create the sentence that I'm building. So let's talk about how these models do create sentences. And I'm not going to wade into stuff like natural language processing. That is a major part of this, but I have done full episodes about natural language processing before. That essentially says it's a way for machines to analyze information that's written in, you know, your normal language, whether that's English or whatever. But you're not trying to create a sentence that the machine is able to parse, right? You're not trying to work with the machine on its terms. You're just communicating with it the way you would with anyone else. It's the machine's job to figure out what the heck you're saying. So we're not going to dwell on that. Instead, we're going to talk about how a chatbot chooses how to respond to something that is said or asked of it. These chatbots are built on top of language models that have had enormous data sets fed to them during training. The data sets include stuff like basic facts. So if you ask a chatbot who was the 16th president of the United States, a well-trained chatbot at least is going to say it was Abraham Lincoln. But that data also trains the chatbot on how we communicate with one another. So through analyzing hundreds of millions of documents ranging from books to online social platforms like Reddit, these chatbot models learn rules of communication. They learn rules about spelling, grammar, syntax. They learn about structure that goes from the sentence level to paragraphs. Like they learn how to build a sentence properly, how to build another sentence that builds on the first one, how to build a whole paragraph that gets a thought across, and then how to do a series of paragraphs to convey meaning of some sort, right? How to build to like a thesis almost. They learn which words typically follow behind other words, which ones are statistically likely to be the best word to use in any given moment. So when a chatbot is dynamically generating a response, it is referencing this huge amount of learning, and that learning will guide the content and influence which facts are included or excluded, but will also just simply guide the chatbot to build sentences properly. So if we were to zoom way in on what is going on as a chatbot builds a new response, we would see the chatbot is selecting words based on statistical probability. Essentially, the chatbot would be considering which word is statistically most likely to be the correct one for that part of its response. Whichever word ranks highest is likely to go in there. Now, guiding this guessing game is the context of the conversation. So if I'm asking a chatbot a question about Abraham Lincoln, the chatbot is not likely to pull superfluous information about like key lime pie or something. So when I talk about which word is statistically most likely to come next, we have to take into account that context is determining this too. Each situation will be unique. And if you and I both are having similar conversations with a chatbot, but we're framing our questions slightly differently, or we're coming at this topic from different perspectives, the responses we get from the chatbot could reflect that. Now, here's where we get into the tricksy territory. Sometimes the chatbot will be attempting to build a response, and there will be a gap in its data set. So for some reason or another, the relevant data to answer our question just isn't there. Or perhaps the language model can't reconcile that the data is relevant for this particular conversation, or maybe there are conflicting elements in its data set. And so in the absence of reliable information, the chatbot simply invents a response by following those statistical rules when constructing a sentence. So what we get is a sentence that is grammatically correct, that is posted in a way that appears to be trustworthy, but it does not necessarily reflect reality. We get an answer that reads as if it is correct, but it's not. It would be as if someone with an agenda had written an article for an encyclopedia and none of the editing staff caught that this was the case, and so the whole thing went to print, and it's presented as if this is objective truth when really it's a subjective point of view. Except with AI, there's no agenda needed because AI is not thinking anything. It's not motivated because it lacks the capability of being motivated. There's no sentience there. There's the mimicry of sentience. There's the appearance of it. And again, I think this is a large reason why we have a lot of people concerned about AI right now, because it appears to be behaving like a person, even though there's nothing behind that, right? There's no sentience or consciousness behind this. It just has the surface level appearance of it. And that's enough to make us start to create all sorts of scenarios where the AI goes bad or sinister. That's not even necessary. It's just trying to answer our questions and occasionally having to make stuff up while it does so. The chatbot, the machine, is just presenting what is estimated to be the most statistically likely response. And by that, I don't mean that the answer is statistically likely to be correct, but rather down to the sentence and paragraph structure that they are statistically probable to be the most correct from a like a grammatical and structural point of view, not from a content perspective. So it's really about how statistically likely is word two to follow word one, and that word three would follow word two, and so on, where the finished sentence is what's important, and whether it's factual or not is immaterial. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. I've got a lot more to say about this. We have to cover a lot more ground.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
We're back. So a lot of the time, perhaps even most of the time, you won't run into trouble when you're using these chatbots because the data set feeding these large language models is truly huge. Plus, there are people working on these models all the time. They're refining them. They're catching mistakes. They're trying to correct those mistakes. They're tweaking the model to prevent it from happening again. But now and again, you might ask a chatbot a question and you'll encounter a situation where there's this gap in the chatbot's data and it makes stuff up. It hallucinates. Personally, I find it both odd and oddly human that the companies behind these chatbots haven't built in a fail-safe where if a chatbot comes up against this kind of situation, it just says something akin to, I don't know the answer to that. And instead, it kind of invents an answer. So it's kind of like being in a conversation with someone who is incapable of admitting that they don't know something. I used to be that guy. In fact, sometimes I still am that guy. I have to catch myself to remind myself that it's actually okay to not know something, and that curiosity is a way better look than trying to bluff your way through life. But then I also admit, I don't know how you would go about implementing a system in which an AI chatbot fesses up to not knowing something. It may not be as simple as that. And there's also a related problem, which is that without knowing what source or sources the AI is referencing for any given query, you don't really know how reliable that response is. If the AI is pulling on information from unreliable sources, whether those sources were poorly informed or they were biased or it was satire and it was just being presented as fact. I've talked about this before on this show. There are a lot of websites that were really popular just a few years ago that called themselves satire, but really they just posted lies. Like, it wasn't satire. There was nothing humorous about it. They weren't saying anything other than just making up stuff. So if the AI is pulling information from those kinds of sources, you cannot expect the AI's answer to magically scrub all the bad from those sources and then provide good information. So in other words, garbage in, garbage out. So in some cases, it may not be that the AI is hallucinating at all. It may just be that it's referencing a poor source for its information. The trouble is, you can rarely tell what's going on from a user standpoint, and the AI presents everything the same way. So you'll get responses with good info, you'll get responses with bad info, and you'll get responses where the AI just made up stuff, and it's all handed to you in a format that makes it impossible to tell the difference between them all on a surface level. So this can lead to really dangerous situations. For example, Google employees reported while they were internally testing the Bard chatbot before Google rolled it out for a beta program, that the responses were unreliable in many cases, and in fact, in some instances, those responses could actually lead to people getting hurt. Allegedly, when asked about scuba diving procedures, Google Bard generated a response that had incorrect information, and if someone were to act on that, they could be injured or worse. So clearly, that represents a real danger. It's one thing if the chatbot gives you the wrong answer to put in your essay about Emily Dickinson. It's another if you're counting on it to teach you how to, I don't know, pack your parachute correctly for your first skydiving solo jump. But there's also the danger of people weaponizing AI hallucinations to push a narrative that may not be accurate. And it's easy, at least, to understand what led people to form that kind of narrative. So I'm going to give a recent example that really happened. Fox News, which has a reputation for right-leaning reporting, it's kind of putting it lightly, published a story relating to Elon Musk's appearances on a show with Fox News personality Tucker Carlson. The accompanying news story pointed out that ChatGPT produced an outright incorrect answer when asked to give a background on the late Al Gore Sr., who's Al Gore's father, the former vice president, his father, served in the House of Representatives and then the U.S. Senate for the state of Tennessee. Now, the ChatGPT generated information on Al Gore Sr. included the following statement, quote, "During his time in the Senate, Gore was a vocal supporter of civil rights legislation and was one of the few Southern politicians to vote in favor of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, end quote. That is 100% not right. That is completely incorrect. Gore actually voted against the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I guess technically it wasn't 100% incorrect because he was a senator, so that part was right. But no, he voted against the Civil Rights Act of 1964. He was a Democrat representing a state that, to put it lightly, in general, was not in favor of granting civil rights to anyone who wasn't white. So what his personal feelings on the matter were, I don't know. I mean, he certainly positioned himself as a defender of the great state of Tennessee's right to oppress people who weren't white. But I can definitely say that he wanted to get reelected. And whether he believed in his vote or not, he did vote against the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Of course, the act passed anyway. And Gore was able to get reelected, and he did subsequently vote in favor of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. But the point is, ChatGPT got this response very wrong, and Fox News positioned it as if this was a feature, not a bug, that was the intended outcome, and it was evidence of a campaign to rewrite history to position Democrats as like saintly saviors who could do no wrong. But there's no need to go looking for a conspiracy here. The problem isn't in some invisible hand guiding ChatGPT to create biased history. It's the very nature of how this kind of AI works. When it doesn't have the data, it makes stuff up based on what is statistically the most quote unquote correct word for the sentence. Now, you might ask, why did ChatGPT not have access to the relevant data? And I do not know the answer to that. I did test this myself, however. I actually opened up ChatGPT and I asked it to give me background on Al Gore Sr. And sure enough, I got a similar response to what Fox reported, including the incorrect fact, quote unquote, that Al Gore Sr. had voted in favor of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So I then asked a follow-up question. I specifically said, how did Al Gore Sr. vote on the Civil Rights Act of 1964? ChatGPT gave me the wrong information again. Then I said, you're wrong, that Al Gore Sr. voted against the Civil Rights Act of 1964. What sources did you use? ChatGPT gave me a message that essentially said, I'm sorry, you're right. Al Gore Sr. didn't vote in favor of the Civil Rights Act. He did vote against it. And then it gave me a vague response that it draws from various articles and such for its answers. It didn't give any specifics. It was not a very satisfying response, but it did at least admit, oh, you're right, I give you the wrong answer. But again, there's no need to assume there was some conspiracy that caused this to happen. These hallucinations happen across every topic, not just history and politics. Yes, if we look at this very specific example, you start to ask, oh, is there an intent here? Is there a desire to rewrite history to make Democratic leaders look more positive in a modern lens? And is it a way to avoid tough questions like which party actually was supporting civil rights and which party was opposing them? If you're talking about Southern Democrats, the answer is they were opposing it because Southern Democrats are very, very different from of the time of the 1960s. Southern Democrats, very different from modern Democrats. But you kind of, you know, if you're whitewashing things, if you're changing the facts to try and make them seem more sympathetic, that would be bad, right? That's clearly manipulation. That, however, I don't think is what's going on here. I think there's no need for it because the AI is just hallucinating and creating information that it thinks is correct, or at least thinks is the most statistically correct answer to give based upon the information it has available to it. And it's presenting it as if it's hard fact, and it's not. So we know that the AI, when it's presenting information that could potentially be harmful, that can't be the intent, right? There's not some cabal out there that's saying, ha, now those scuba divers who aren't smart enough to ask people who are really knowledgeable about this, but will turn to AI, they'll get to what's coming to them. Like, that makes no sense. So I don't think there's any intentional approach to trying to create misinformation. The problem is, by its very nature, these chatbots create misinformation in these instances. Not in every case, but in enough cases where it is a problem. I think there is bias in these chatbots, and including ChatGPT. In fact, I don't think there's bias. There's just bias, but it's necessary bias. So you might recall a few years ago, Microsoft released an AI chatbot named Tay, T-A-Y. This chatbot was supposed to respond to people, specifically younger people. This is Microsoft's attempt to relate to the youth. It was supposed to do so in a natural way, and it was also supposed to learn as users interacted with Tay, like learn how to interact in a way that was reflective of the culture of the time. So it would pick up slang and it would pick up phrases and perspective and points of view. And in less than 24 hours, Microsoft had to take it down because within 24 hours, users had already turned Tay into a crazy, racist, misogynistic, toxic machine. Tay was a disaster, both from a technical perspective and a PR perspective. So AI companies have started to put in restrictions, like guardrails, to keep AI from going to extremes. So it includes tools that try to prevent AI from generating hate speech, for example, or slandering people. Now, these tools are far from perfect, and there are plenty of examples of people figuring out ways around them, and there are plenty of examples of ChatGPT even saying factually that a person, you know, was accused of and convicted of a crime when that's just not the case. Like that, there have been examples of that happening as well. But these rules do tend to push AI responses in a general direction, right? This is bias. It's intentional bias, but it's also not meant to be harmful. It's meant to try and avoid situations that themselves could be harmful, either to users or, more pointedly, to the companies behind the chatbots. Because you got to remember, OpenAI, one of the big business models for it is to work with other companies and to incorporate ChatGPT into the tools and services that these other companies have. Well, if ChatGPT gets a reputation for going off on racist rants, that's not a good look, and no one's going to want to incorporate ChatGPT into their business, and then OpenAI doesn't have a product to sell. So there's like a, it's not just altruistic, right? It's not just, we don't want to cause harm. It's, we don't want to kill ourselves out of getting business. So there's a lot of work being done to try and guide ChatGPT's responses to avoid the extremes and to avoid things that would cause problems. As a result, it could be an overcorrection, and we could be seeing that ChatGPT is creating responses that don't reflect reality and do appear to be erasing important historical context. So the bias in combination with gaps in knowledge can lead chatbots to appear, at least on a surface level, to have a political leaning to them. But again, I don't think that's the result of a conspiracy. I don't think that was intentional. I think it's the natural destination, considering one, how these chatbots work, and two, the guardrails that are put up there to prevent chatbots from going bonkers. Now, to be clear, I don't think we should just accept this. Anytime any chatbot presents incorrect information as fact, that is a problem, particularly when companies like Google and Microsoft are looking to incorporate these tools into stuff like search results. It would be like going to a library and the librarian has their own agenda to only point people to resources that support the librarian's own personal philosophy, and they never point out anything that would contradict it. That would also not be good. The lack of transparency makes it worse. Ultimately, I would caution anyone from relying too heavily on responses generated by AI based on these large language models. Now, you might not ever encounter a response that includes hallucinations or draws from unreliable sources. But based on how these chatbots present information, you also could never really be sure that that's the case unless you then went to the extra trouble to fact check the AI. And at that point, you're just doing the additional research you would have done at the beginning without the AI being there in the first place. So I think AI hallucinations are a huge problem. That's another thing that the Fox News article kind of ignored. Like, it felt like it was a gotcha moment in the Fox News article. But the fact is, if you just search AI and hallucinations on whatever web search you like, you're going to find countless articles across the entire media spectrum that have been bringing this up for months, and concerns that people both within and outside the industry have had about hallucinations and AI, and that this is not a new thing. And it's not, again, it's not related specifically to trying to rewrite history. It's more of a broad problem in the field itself that affects all sorts of responses. And we absolutely should be concerned about it and be working toward fixing it. That the hallucinations present a genuine problem, and it's not necessarily because there's a cabal trying to rewrite how the world works and brainwash everyone. You don't need the cabal for that to happen. The AI is doing it itself because it's working from a very complex statistical table, and very few people have the insight into that table or understanding of it to fix the issues. So yeah, that in a nutshell is the problem of hallucinations in AI. I don't see it going away soon unless we move away from the large language model approach of AI. And there are alternatives out there. There are companies that are pursuing a different approach to creating a reliable chatbot, and maybe they'll have better success. Yeah, flights of fancy are fun when it's fiction, but when it's someone trying to present to you a factual document, it's less fun. So hopefully we suss this out before it causes any more problems. And again, while I do think this is a type of AI that we should keep our eyes on and we should ask critical questions and we should use critical thinking, it's not necessarily the AI that I'm concerned about the most when it comes to things like, I don't know, a potential existential threat. All right, that's it. I hope all of you are well out there. Be careful, especially with AI. You know, make sure you double check. I know it's a hassle, but it can save you a lot of grief down the road. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.